In the vineyards, two figures, a man and a woman, his wife, bent and unbent as they broke or twisted or wrenched or cut the grape bunches. Only their shoulders and heads were visible, for the vines grew tall and straight in the rich red clay. The woman's hair was a dull chestnut, but not ugly. It was kept in a large, neat knot at the nape of her neck. Her face was tired, her eyes luminous. She had a graceful, thin mouth and a strong, ruddy complexion of peasantry. Her shoulders were broad, rising graciously. The man wore an old hat, and the features of his face were hidden under the tattered brim. He was a small man, and his shoulders were not so wide nor firm as hers, and they rose, it seemed, with some labor above a thin and sunken chest. But he moved with the ease of one with muscular strength and agility. One other figure, a girl, small and delicate and hardly perceptible, moved among the vines and agitated them and caused the leaves to flutter. The girl was hidden by the tall poles, but her head could be seen intermittently bobbing up and down and reflecting as it did so flashes of sunlight. She moved with such ease and grace that one knew at a glance the flitting form was not that of a workman. The fawn-like movement stopped suddenly, and the girl vanished from view. But the voice was shrill and full of young life as she cried. The little girl ran up the slope of the hill, carrying with her an old nest, the rotting home of some other fledgling fellow creature. Panting, she reached the end of the straight rows, stole through the two horizontal poles that served as a fence, and found herself on the soggy road. As she ran along the grassy margin of the path, it continued to wind itself around the bulge of the hill, and as she ran, she yelled, "Antony, Antony!" Where the road sprawled out again, she stopped. She held her arm up, pushing the tiny fist into the air. "Antony!" she cried again with a liquid voice. "Antony, look what I have!" She waved the old nest at a boy in the vine rows. The boy, not much bigger than Maria, could scarcely be seen in the vineyard. Maria located the boy's father near him. She caught sight of Antony. The girl looked about as if expecting to see someone else, and when she saw no one, she asked, "Why is your mother not helping to gather the grape?" Antony said nothing. They had walked off the vineyard and were on the pasture. "Why?" insisted the girl. The boy's eyes fixed her with an intense glow, and he said, his voice trailing, "I have no mother." "Why?" asked Maria. "Because she is dead." "Was she beautiful like my mother?" "Father said she was very beautiful." "May I be your mother when I am big?" She spoke with such seriousness that Antony felt constrained to suppress a laugh, and the glow left his eyes, and they were serene again when he spoke. "You can't be my mother." "Why?" asked Maria persistently. "You ask so many questions," said Antony, turning to her. He added almost with despair, "Because I don't know. When you are big, I shall be big too." Maria hadn't thought of that. "And then I shall have a wife," added the boy. "May I be your wife?" "If you wish." "I do. Will you like that?" Antony looked at the paling sky with an expression beyond his years. He leaned his head a little on one side. Then his face came up full of wisdom. He had stopped and looked at her, and suddenly she was filled with light, and she was a very beautiful little angel. And he said to her, "I think I should like that very much." And so opens The Long Years by Carmen Pascal Fabian. If that name sounds a little familiar to you, it's perhaps because you had met Carmen Fabian. He was a man of warmth, of humor, strength, of purpose. He was a city councilman in West Lafayette when I first met him in the early 1980s. But he had come to that position after a long career in education, where he had served as a teacher, as the principal at Morton School, now the Morton Community Center, across from the library, and as assistant school superintendent for West Lafayette. He was a man of great accomplishment, a community icon, and a fellow with a great mustache. Mr. Fabian was the author of a book for children, The Boy Who Cornered the Peanut Market, and the author of today's feature title, The Long Years. Not surprisingly, and quite fitting with his reputation and personality, today's book is focused not on Carmen, but on his old world heritage, the at times harrowing and yet also uplifting lives of a young man and a young woman in early 20th century Italy. We meet our characters, Maria and Antony, from that very first page. And from the first, we immerse ourselves into Carmen's loving and wise understanding of these peasants of the Italian countryside. They are emotionally emotive, hardworking, and loving of their families. And they are, as peasants are so often portrayed, long-suffering and bound to their land, their town. And the events of their lives are tied not to the daily time clock, but rather wrapped up in the significant changes to their existence in this landscape of hills and valleys, places where history is measured in centuries, not in decades. As Mr. Fabian writes about these people of the rural Italian countryside, the careless physical exterior of the town was reflected in the inward feeling of the inhabitants. They were not a happy lot. Not happy, that is, if one understands by the word a spiritual exuberance and exaltation which sets the heart afire and the body into lively activity. They were contented. They worked with little hope of betterment and lived and loved and hated and pitied and ran the gauntlet of emotion. But they weren't happy. These were people who reckoned time not by the calendar, but by the milestones in their highways of life, marking periods of good fortune and periods of misfortune. More often, the catastrophes far outbalanced the scales against them. But that, too, was part of living, and they took all with a shrug of the shoulder. They counted the years from the great earthquake of 1915, which razed the local city of Avezzano to the ground, and consequently had superseded the fire in importance. The quake had shaken their town of Piccolo Popolo, doing damage, ironically, only to St. Anthony's Church. Yes, the long years is a throwback to a time when immigrants from Southern Europe were a vital part of the North American contemporary experience, when their hard-won immigration and settlement in our nation told stories, sometimes harrowing, sometimes full of love, that had been brought with them to their new land and their new homes here in the New World. And so while this is a true family-centered story, well told, and well worth reading, it contains within its story an already fading picture of European life, of American life. We are fortunate to have this reminder of an American immigrant past set in such lively prose. As you heard, our story starts innocently and lovingly enough, as Fabian explores both young love and the rural hinterlands of Italy. Yet even as Maria and Antony are coming of teenage years, there is a concurrent rise of fascism in Italy, which Mr. Fabian paints as intruding even into the quiet rural peasant life of our characters. Indeed, not halfway through our book, a chill comes into this story of love and persistence as the mother superior of the small town convent where the still young Maria arrives to continue her high school education. The mother superior telling her fellow sisters of the changes that were coming upon Italy, even in these small rural towns of Italy, that were going to change the way they taught the girls at their convent. As Fabian writes, the Mother Superior was at once a combination of Nero and St. Francis, as the situation might warrant. At 40, she was large and buxom, a point in her favor in asserting herself and making her leadership felt. The new girls feared her. The older ones worshipped her. When she gave an order, the new girls froze. The older obeyed smilingly. They seemed willing. The new girls shunned her. The older ones sought her company. In time of trouble, scholastic or otherwise, she was always there, the solid rock. On this particular afternoon, Mother Superior was holding what the others laughingly called her Council of War. She held forth as a tired old general. The sisters, 10 in all, were all gathered in the small library on the second floor. This was a rectangular room with books stacked high on the long walls. Large windows on the shorter side opposite the door admitted slabs of gray light. The sisters were seated more or less informally about tables. The Mother Superior, seated very erect at the large desk in front of the window, was talking. Her voice was clear and sonorous. She spoke excellent Florentine. Her face was in the dark. Her massive shoulders and large head were etched against the windows. "This will be an extremely difficult year for us," she said. Then, after a very short pause, added, "Difficult, I suppose, because the times are difficult. In days less colorful, if black be colorful," some of the sisters smiled because their own vestments were black, "we could have found a way through any difficulty. Now the judicious procedure is to prevent the difficulties from arising. For this, we need the full cooperation of all of us, as I know we shall have. Here she paused, again as if assuming a change of subject. Many of the girls are new here, and they have not been away from home previously. For them, this will be a drastic change. The political situation may be palatable to some of them and distasteful to others. They will be nervous and irritable. Ours is the part not to make converts of them to one or another political philosophy, but to help them in this, their most trying hour. Indeed, the black shirts, the fascist underbelly of locals who are the mainstay of support for the dictatorship of Mussolini, had come upon the countryside even here as a dark cloak, forcing all to bow to their so-called patriotic wishes. And as you may guess, young Maria's boyfriend, himself a new immigrant to urban life in Rome from their shared small village, has bought into black shirt propaganda and fallen head over heels for the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini, a bromance that more than once threatens the young couple's love and trust for each other. For while Antony is a black shirt to his roots, Maria is a young woman of questioning spirit and mind, a student who sneaks off for long solitary afternoons in a dusty attic filled with banned books that only she and the Mother Superior know exists. Yet for all their political divisions, and they are portrayed as deep and real, Maria and Antony find ways to get over what separates them, both the distance between Rome for Antony and the small town in Campania for Maria. The postal service, not a small way they stay in touch between school breaks, when they can be temporarily reunited. I won't give away the somewhat expected conclusion except to say that love conquers all in the long years. Maria's passion for thought leads her into confrontation with the Italian fascists, even as her beloved Antony becomes more deeply enfolded into the black shirt leadership. And as the novel reaches its climax, Antony discovers his beloved Maria has been thrown into an island prison, forcing him to make the choice of his life and come down on the side of the woman he loves, placing his own life into peril as he works the corrupt, war-ravaged system to free his lifelong love. In a series of skullduggery actions with a last chapter that seems to promise Maria and Antony a better life, even as the violence of the Allied war machine finally reaches the Italian shores, our novel ends in a marvelously ambiguous yet potentially upbeat manner. As Carmen Fabian ends his novel, Antony has just survived the first air raid by British planes attacking the southern coast of Italy, not far from where his beloved is still held on that prison island. As Carmen Fabian tells us in his last words, "Just after the bombing ended, street cleaners appeared. One old man in particular stopped and looked south. The wrinkled face was placid, but the eyes danced. They had the look of one dreaming a wonderful dream. When Antony passed him, he heard the old cleaner humming to himself. Antony didn't know the words, but the tune was an old, old one. His father might have sung while gathering grapes. He turned his head and looked at the old man again. The ancient was motionless as a marble statue. The tune followed Antony down the long street. Antony touched his pocket again. To himself he murmured, 'Maria.' He hastened his footsteps and walked briskly among his people." The Long Years, it's a tale of politics, it's a tale of war, and most of all, it's a tale of love from early childhood well into adulthood, set in war-ravaged Italy during World War II. It's truly a fitting story to be told by Carmen Pascal Fabian, and it's available at the West Lafayette Public Library.